now they have all the things like, hey, by the way, you can partner with us to publish it if you have the like financials for it. Or if you make an indie game, you can sell it on our store. Or if...
Welcome to Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast, your place for resources and in-depth conversations with other game development professionals. I'm your host, John J.P. Podlasic. I've worked at 10 different game companies, starting back in 1989 with the TurboGrafx-16. Over the decades, I've developed games like Mortal Kombat, Avengers Initiative, Beavis and Butthead, and numerous others. I now work for a startup called Level X. But this podcast isn't about me. It's about you and the game development community. So if you have questions or ideas, give a call, 224-484-7733, or go to the gamedevadvice.com website. So let's kick things off with the new Game Dev Advice.
Hey, everybody. I've got Justin Molman here tonight. Justin, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you doing, John?
I am doing good, all things considered here. Like what projects, because I know you've got a lot of them, do you have going on right now? So kind of give a breakdown of all of your stuff, because it's a pretty amazing list of stuff you got going on.
Yeah. It's one of those things that when people try to ask what I do, they're always like, nah, you're not doing all that. But sadly, I am. And I have even been audited by the IRS twice because they're like, you're not doing all that. And then when I provided like proof of it, they're like, oh, shit. So my main gig now is I'm a game development producer and content developer for Epic Games. Been with them for about a year now.
Great.
And I can't really say exactly what I'm doing, but a lot of the stuff that we'll do, like there's some stuff that I can't say. So
yeah, that's fair.
What I'm also helping with is the main initiative is really to like spearhead the education aspect of it, because there's the game development side, there's the, you know, like the visual effects side, the arc previs, and then we have like the enterprise side, which kind of covers the automotive and everything like that. So what we're trying to do is take the educational aspect of like, hey, here's our products, here's Unreal Engine, here's how to use it, here's how the way that we like to use the actual engine.
Right.
So I'm trying to create structure around it for a game development path, like using learning paths, so identifying key roles like a level designer, shader artists, and you know, gameplay programmers, all that fun stuff, and creating educational learning paths that takes someone from junior to mid-level to senior, and then also doing project-based courses, which then takes those skills and wraps them around like a concept like, hey, now that you know that, let's go ahead and create a first-person horror game using this tool. So it's kind of, it'll kind of mimic some of the stuff that you might see in like a Resident Evil, but we can't say that because of copyright reasons. But the idea is we show people, hey, here's all the different roles you can learn to be in, to be part of the game development industry. And then once you have those skills, here's just some fun projects you can use, which reflect like the actual game dev cycle, like pre-production, production, post-production.
What's the format, like video or?
It's
or
video.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's video. It's text-based, it's blog. Like we're doing like kind of all over. It's been fun because I kind of get, I'm in charge of creating the whole pipeline for it and the whole team, which has been a bit interesting in a good way. It just, I wasn't like expected to be like, oh, hey, dude, you take the reins. I was like, oh, okay. And they kind of went with me because, I mean, I've been working on video games now. This is year 17, which is crazy. And I've been teaching college for art schools for 13 years now. So I have that kind of fine balance, plus the work with the rookies allows me to have that connection with the different developers, studios, and schools. So what I've been doing is dealing with different studios, different developers, different schools to figure out as well like what they're looking for, but also to find these top tier professionals. Like one of my guys that I just picked up, he's like one of the top notch ones at Warner Brothers in Montreal, and he's like an Unreal guru. So we're working with him to create a level design pipeline. And it's interesting because, you know, we will have like our Epic main players that are part of the main teams, like old school, have been here for like 20 years and they'll be there to kind of like give their thoughts on it. We call them like the subject matter experts, but the goal is to, you know, Epic has been really, really keen on not only sharing their tech, but they want to make sure that you can learn it properly. Because there's so many different resources out there, but then once you learn it, now they have all the things like, hey, by the way, you can partner with us to publish it if you have the like financials for it, or if you make an indie game, you can sell it on our store, or if you don't, you just want to sell some assets or some code or script or something you wrote, you can sell it on our marketplace.
Right.
They're kind of giving everyone like all these options, especially nowadays when a lot of people are like, well, what do I do for work? Or I just graduated college. What do I do?
Well,
you're kind of empowered to do that with all these tools they're giving you.
Right.
Which I wish I would have had.
You wish you had 17 years ago, right? It's like none of that stuff.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's that one.
Pretty interesting. Yeah. Keep going. I know you got more.
I do teach at Columbia College, just some like large team classes and game development stuff, which has been interesting because we had to shift to using Discord.
Yeah.
And then, which has been fine because, you know, it is what it is. They only have like 2 weeks left. I've been teaching remotely in Germany and Cologne, which has been fun. So I've been doing that for over 3 years. So it's an interesting process. Like the school is called Pixel Vision Media Academy.
Pixel Vision?
Pixel Vision. Yeah.
It's
a small school. There's like 400 of them, but they are on par quality wise with like Noman and Think Tank. They've been winning.
Some aviators.
I would say they're as good or if not better. Cause I'm like, when you look at their stuff, they're like, holy cow.
Wow.
And it's crazy because in Germany, universities are free, except for this, you have to elect to go there to pay for it. So the people that go there really want to go there.
Yeah. They're hungry.
Exactly. So they're putting in like a different effort. I do have the tattoo shop. I've had it for...
Wow. You've had that a while, right?
10 years now.
10 years? I thought it was like 5. Wow.
Yeah. 10 years. So me and like 3 other guys. So it's a little bit frustrating because, you know, we're still trying to get the small business loan. We tried to get the first round and we didn't make it in time. We're trying to get the second one. Luckily, we have a lot of money saved so we can afford to pay bills and help some of the guys.
Yeah, but weather the storm.
We got the rookies, which is... they've been around for 10 years. Actually, this is our 10-year anniversary.
But 10 years. Yeah, tell more about that too, because I think
so. The rookies is great. Yeah, the rookies is great. So I've been helping for 6 years now, and I met the guys ironically just through a couple friends, and they're based in Australia, and they're like 20 plus year veterans in the film industry, like top tier. Like there's Alan Hunt, and he was like a senior lead texture artist at Weta, Rising Sun, all these big studios.
Weta.
Yeah. And he's the one that textured Smog and Hobbit, and like he's up there, really nice guy, but he knows his texture stuff. And now he's at Adobe working with, he's like the Oceana representative for Adobe and Substance Painter and all those programs.
Okay.
So he got a nice gig up there. And then there's Andrew, and he's more from the modeling side, Andrew McDonald, and him and his wife are like the power couple because they were over at ILM for a long time and a bunch of Animal Logic before that. And now she's like the main executive producer for the mill down in Australia. And he's doing the rookies full time. But again, so their whole thing was they always saw a gap between what studios wanted and what schools were providing. So they wanted to bridge that gap. They wanted to be able to have people who went to these small schools be able to have the same shot to get a job at the big companies.
Right.
But there was never platforms. So basically they created this thing called the Rookies, which was, it started off as the CG Student Awards, but we changed it to the Rookies to make it more, you know, brand favorable and kind of less corporate sounding.
Right.
And every single year we would have like this one main contest from March till June, where we would have all these different categories. We'd have thousands of students apply and we'd have judges from around the world, art directors from like Naughty Dog, Pixar, Weta, the top tier people that would never, ever, ever look at people's work any other scenario because they're just too busy. Usually when you apply to a studio, it has to go through like HR and some recruiters and maybe some senior leads, but it's, you know, you're very rarely getting like the main people looking at stuff.
Straight to the source,
exactly. So we start doing that and the winners would get paid internships and paid jobs at these studios. And
that's cool.
It's been going really successful. Like we've placed hundreds of people in jobs because since then it's become a way where now studios like Weta, for example, always knows that we're going to have a certain amount of talented people. So they'll be like, hey, we need this many people for this. And we'll planning. now that Yeah. And we have the analytics in our back end. So we can be like, oh, cool. Here's five people that know Mari that are in that have green cards to work in the Oceania area. Boom. There you go. Epic has been doing it with us now too. Cause they're like, oh, we need a couple lighting artists or whatnot that are, have like their visas to work in Canada. Cool. Boom. Here.
I see. That's cool.
Yeah. Very so cool. It's becoming a lot more that, a lot more mini challenges with smaller brands. Like we're doing another challenge with hopefully later this year, Pixar, based on the RenderMan stuff to bring people. We're doing challenges with like Epic. We're doing challenges with DreamWorks and some other ones. And the goal is to like, it's to help people land internships, get, you know, the highlight door on them. Yeah. But also we've introduced like this whole feature where we have schools of the year, and the idea is the school of the year is, it doesn't matter how big you are, how expensive you are. It's more or less like, hey, we're looking at raw, like how, who's submitting, what's the quality level, how far are they getting in? So we're looking at just the talent that's getting pumped out. And we're trying to like also provide resources in terms of like, you know, making sure that you have the best knowledge to go to these certain schools, go to these certain studios, understand the software. So we're trying to become, we realize that we're not going to do tutorials. It's just not our thing. There's plenty of websites out there doing that.
Right.
We're just trying to be like an educational hub for it, which has been, it's been great. So for me, I'll help as a judge. My main role is as a creative director for them, but I'm just helping with like just challenges, ideas. And it's been fun because that's one of the main reasons I got my job with Epic, was because I was working with them a lot through the rookies. And
right.
It just was a natural transition to help them with that stuff. So I've been doing editor, contributing editor and editor for this magazine called Heavy Metal for...
Yes, like about, I remember that.
Yeah, just about 6 years now.
Well, when did Heavy Metal... It goes back to like the 70s,
77.
Right? Damn, I remember that in freaking high school back in the 80s. That was like the shit with your... Yeah.
Yeah, it started off as in France, and it was called Metal Levant. It was brought over here, I just kind of like randomly got involved with it, just through my connections with like art, but also music. And I started helping them bring talent in on the music side, but also art side and stories. And they've been really, it's been fun. I mean, like, I never thought I'd be working with the comic book industry, but it, again.
For 6 years, you said?
Yeah, I've been doing it for, it's been a while. So it's been fun. I think I worked on 13 issues with them already. And before then I was doing like, I'd help with like conventions and just some like admin stuff. But now I'm doing more and more editing stuff, and they're actually publishing 8 of our comics that me and another buddy, Dan, made that are going to be coming out.
Okay.
So it's fun. And lastly, for right now. Photography is there, but I have like this Forrest Gump job where I am now the bass player for Metallica. Rob, I'm just like one of his assistants. I help him with the social media, help him with art content.
Wait a minute, so you're doing social media for Metallica, you said?
For Rob Trujillo, the bass player.
Oh, the bass player, right. Okay, they came in after the other guy was in the bus. And
Jason. There's Cliff and Jason. And okay. Rob's been with him for 17 years now.
Yeah. Damn. Crazy.
Yeah. He has helped me a lot, but I got that one through helping us through just like photography and doing, because I don't know if you know, when I was at Midway, where I first met you, I would work all day at Midway at Mortal Kombat stuff. But then from, I think it's from 9 p.m., till 2 a.m. almost every single night, I went to a recording studio, and I worked at a recording studio every single night too.
Okay. Yeah. I remember the recording studio stuff. Yeah.
So that's how like it all got kicked off. So it's been a fun thing, but like, I work a lot, but I each of the jobs are fun. And if you think about it, they all kind of plug into each other in some way. And there's been weird times where everything's kind of like come full circle. Like we got to have a guitar pedal demo that we made a guitar pedal for a coffee brand, Dark Matter, that we worked with, and we had a Mastodon demo it inside of the tattoo shop. So it was like, I was like, oh, cool, everything's coming. Like, so
Mastodon, that's pretty impressive.
So but there's times where we can actually have everything like wrapped together, so it's fun. And then like, it's the one thing I try to tell like students and just anyone that's doing games, I never thought I'd be working in games. When I was going to art school, that wasn't a degree. It wasn't an option. It was, I think we just started getting 3D. It was like, all right, here's a giant 1,000 page textbook on Maya 4. Read it.
Good luck. Dive in.
Exactly. And then everything else, like, it's kind of like we were talking about earlier. It's like, if you have little, if you have enough people skills to navigate and that you have a work ethic, you can do games and you can do more. Because what games is just like finding a way to visually problem solve and communicate, which most people can't. They can't do that at all. So if you can do that and you can find yourself in scenarios where you can take advantage of it, like I have.
Yeah, you're set.
Exactly. Yeah. I started doing photography like 2 years ago now. Okay. Because I was like, I've got a weird intimate relationship in terms of being able to work with a lot of these bands where I could go, I could randomly just ask them, hey, can I shoot you? And I'll bring my phone, my camera, and they'll let me, and they'll let me get weird access just because I've known them from a friend capacity from either recording with them or just general, like the weird thing about musicians and just everyone, they love video games. So
right. They want
to ask you more questions than you think. And I'm sure you've gotten that too. Like how many people want to ask, like, wait, you worked on Mortal Kombat?
Blah, blah, blah.
Right,
like, right. Yeah, we'll tell you more about that. I
shot a bunch of shows with Tenacious D and with Ghost, and I did a small little run with Nine Inch Nails, and I was supposed to do another run with like Gojira this year. And then,
we developed a game at Level X called Cardio X.
Yeah, I played that. Yeah,
you play it. Yeah, and you know, we learned through focus testing that cardiologists listen to ambient music. Right, it's like a way to calm their nerves when they're doing surgery. So Jeff Linville, the audio, he did a whole soundtrack for the Cardio X game, ambient music. You know, they listen to that while they're doing surgery. Why not put that in the game? So this video game, you know, for cardiologists has a soundtrack that's on Spotify, and you can listen to the whole Cardio X soundtrack. So 17 years ago, artist, flashback, you know. How did you get started? Was it High Voltage, right? Or were you someplace before?
Yeah, it was High Voltage. I got lucky. Okay. It's one of those things that like I try to tell all students, like, because teaching for 13 years now, I've been like, I was at DePaul, I was at Columbia, I was at, I've done classes at Think Tank and did some stuff at SCAD. And I did like a bunch of stuff at the Art Institute. And I see students in every single school, even the best schools, I'd say like 80% of them just don't get it.
Yeah.
The people who actually get it are always the ones that have struggled in some way, like either financially they're paying for themselves to be here. They've done their job. They come back, because the one thing that you can control is when you show up to class, how you act when you're in class, and do you submit things on time, and are you showing progression? Like, do you know when to ask? Like, are you asking because you're too lazy to research it, or are you asking because you've exhausted all possibilities? And
Yeah, it's a big difference, right?
It totally is.
Like Google it, dumbass, versus like, here's what I Googled and here are my five options and what's the best path. It's like, okay, I'll talk to that guy. Yeah. Or person.
So I got lucky. There was he worked, I don't know if you remember him, because he worked at Midway as well. His name was Brian McRae. Do you remember him?
Yeah. He was like a character artist or something, right?
Yeah. Character and environment artist. Like, you know, he was on like, I don't know if he was on Deception or whatnot, but I feel like he's
back in NetherRealm, if I remember right. Yeah. Yeah. I know. He plays guitar, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. He had long hair kind of like, so he was my, he taught like one semester at the Art Institute in Schaumburg where I went. And the one semester was there, I got him for my intermediate modeling class. And I was like, fuck yeah. And I just showed up to class like I always did. Like I showed up and, you know, I was working three jobs paying for my own college. So I took that stuff super serious.
Yeah.
So I'd show up and I was like, I want to figure this out. I want to learn it. And also because I'm pretty much not a spaz. I mean, you know me, I'm pretty chill most of the time. So I wasn't like overly anxious or like just, I wouldn't go up to him and just stare and be like, so you work at a game studio? How do you do? Like it was,
right.
I was like, all right, cool. I'm going to learn from you. But he pulled me aside and he's like, hey, there's a internship over at High Voltage. I think you'd be great for it. Like I already put your name in. It wasn't even an option. He's like, I already put your name in, go talk. And I ended up getting it. And it was a crash course for sure. Like I started off by doing animation. I was doing audio. I did audio for a little bit, then I was doing animation too. I was doing animation cleanup on mocap for some stuff. I started doing some audio stuff, audio and QA stuff for Leisure Suit Larry, which was...
Yeah. They rebooted that with Brian Blicky and and they had the big mocap studio too there, Red Eye or something like that.
Yep, Red Eye. And it was hilarious because it's like the first, like High Voltage, by the way, it's like an independent, I think it's the world's largest independent studio. I didn't remember. third party.
They've been around forever, right?
Since yeah, it's like 90s. 25 years.
Yeah.
So we were there's always so many projects working on at that place. So I got put on Leisure Suit Larry for a couple of weeks, which was like scrubbing audio and scrubbing audio for that. It's just like you're listening, you're hearing porn sounds. And I was like, what the fuck?
Right, for Leisure Suit.
I was remember like trying to explain it to my parents, and they're like, "Oh, great!" And I remember like Ron Jeremy came into the studio one day. And
right, his, I heard about that.
His luggage was like on a black garbage bag, and I was like, "I don't want to fucking go near him. I don't want to touch that guy."
You mean any gloves?
Yeah, I was like, "Oh no, I'm good." but then the second one I got put after was I was doing animation cleanup for this one game called Duel Masters, and it was like, I mean, and that's the one thing as a student, you have to be like, when you're getting out, starting off in the industry, people now are kind of spoiled because they're like, I want to do this. I want to do that. I'm like, it's cool. But what positions are actually available on these websites?
Right.
For you to do, it's like, not like, it's cool that you like to draw or you want to be a character artist.
Right.
Look at your skills and look at the openings and realize that everyone wants to be a character artist.
Right. It's
like, and you have to like, kind of like get your foot in the door and then you can move around. So like I got my foot door and then was doing the animation cleanup, which was I didn't mind it. And then they hired me on to do, because I expressed interest in doing modeling. I was like, hey, I want to do modeling texturing, and then they hired me on.
Right.
So I only interned for like 3 months, and then they hired me on, and my first project was Jackass the game, which never came out.
I remember hearing about that.
Oh my god,
development.
It was a trip, like, because the cast would come in and you'd see like Wee Man like running around and in a full like a mocap bodysuit, just running around pranking. They just run around pranking each other in the studio while people are working.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And there was something hilarious. So,
hey, hope you're enjoying the show. If you are, please go to patreon.com/gamedevadvice. We'd love to see if you can support the show and help new episodes keep coming out. That's patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Thanks.
Back in the day, do you remember Havoc? It was the physics. So,
dude, I helped sign that contract for version 1.0 to be used by Midway with games like PsyOps and stuff. And they're based out of Ireland.
Yes.
Yes, Havoc. It's a physics.
So physics engine. You'll appreciate this. So the IT guy at the time, which I think he's still the IT guy, but I never liked him. I'm not going to say his name, but so I had to go in when we were working on Jackass, because a lot of it was like, we're using like ragdoll physics and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to edit these XML Havoc files. And instead of me doing save, I did print, and I didn't realize it. And the next morning there was a stack of over 600 pages on my desk and a bill. And they took the money of the ink and paper out of my check. Because the IT guy, he's like, "You just spiced it." I was like, what the? Like, it was an accident, but I kept the stack of paper there. Like, and so like I duct taped it all together. I just brought it to every single desk that I had. I was like, because they move you around.
I bought these. I might as well do with them.
Oh, dude, I was an asshole about it. Because like, you know,
but there was a dick move. I was like, yeah, hey, by the way, you did that. Maybe you don't want to, but yeah, power trip. Yeah. IT with the power trip, imagine that.
It was like a $15 thing. I was like, but ultimately, like when you go back now, it's like the one thing that was it's nice about High Voltage is that we're all in it together. Like the leadership, like we're all kind of like in this thing where it's like, all right, well, we're there, and they still were able to turn out the content and make it shippable. And they always had like I would say this, if you start off at High Voltage, you're going to go to a good studio because it's like they prepare you for fucking everything. So yeah, then I went to Midway from High Voltage, and Midway was interesting. I loved it. I was a kid in a candy store because I remember like, do you remember? Because you grew like I'm from McHenry, so like over in Crystal Lake. Do you guys ever remember Wags? It was
We used to go there at 3 a.m. Yeah.
So it was Walgreens stores. For those who don't know, it had this restaurant called Wags, whose mascot was a raccoon, if I remember right.
It's an IHOP knockoff, basically.
Yes. Yeah. So IHOP took them all over. But I remember going to one in McHenry, which was like so far away. If I had to ride my bike, it took me like an hour and a half to get there because it was the only place that had a Mortal Kombat arcade machine.
In a Wags?
Yeah. It was in the very front. It was like the foyer area was a Mortal Kombat one.
Wow.
And that's the only reason I wanted to go there. But for me, it was a trip because I was like sitting there and I'm like, I didn't know I was going to go to college, let alone make games. And then to like get the offer to work on the Mortal Kombat games, I was like, this is awesome. So
it was fun.
Yeah. Like I got to, right when I jumped in, I started doing the cinematic stuff for Shaolin Monks, which was fun. And then I jumped on with you guys. I was hired to do the cinematics team. And then with like Chuck Grinst, I think hired me, and then Mike Turan and Tony Goski stole me. Steve Rand stole me to be on Armageddon.
MKDC or Armageddon? Okay.
Yeah, it was Armageddon. So that was fun. I mean, I helped with some background. Like I did, like I helped on two of the main things, but then I mainly just did like the Cart Quest and Conquest and some other random stuff.
Conquest, yeah.
Conquest was a beast. Yeah. That was that was like Armageddon in general was like five games in one.
Yeah, it was MK Kitchen Sink, I used to call it.
Yeah, it was
crazy. It's got everything. More modes, more levels. It was crazy.
No, it was fun there, though. Like, again, you had to be, like, flexible. Like, I think there was just, like, there was a crunch, but it didn't feel like a crunch because I was, like, excited to work on the project. After I got done with the Armageddon one, I got dragged on because everyone that was free at that point got dragged on to Stranglehold. Which was, that was the first, like, it still was one of the first true next-gen games for, like, Xbox 360, PS3, and just seeing all that new tech, I was just, my mind was blown. I was like, holy shit, like, normal maps? What? Like, that wasn't a thing before. I was like, what the hell?
I got these tools?
Yeah, like, it was all, like, we were using Unreal 3 engine from scratch, like, the very first one, and then, obviously, like, the midway way was to, like, rip it up and start throwing everything out and like, well, we're going to make everything destructible.
Yeah, it was a big deal with that game. It was all destructible environments. Yeah.
And then the ironic thing is, obviously, like a year later, they release an update which has this tool called Fracture that does everything super quick. Meanwhile, we were like spending like so much time hand cutting like columns and all these other pieces and like capping the edges and giving physics to every single piece so it would work right. And nope.
Yep. Cool. So like, what kind of advice would you give 3D artists already working in the field right now?
Honestly, stand up, stretch your legs, take care of your hands. I just got these glasses from this one brand called Barner, like Barner. They're, I don't need glasses for sight, but they're the UV reflection ones.
Okay. For the blue light stuff?
Yeah. Those ones. And when I wear them, like I was kind of like hesitant, but now when I do wear them, like my eyes feel completely different, like not dry, not tired. I did start to notice like a couple years ago, my hands would like clench up, not arthritis, but like I'd get like weird spasms and like my mouse finger and all that stuff. And it was because it's another one. So it's like when you sit all the time and you're there, because if you're like on the computer all the time, your arms are like bent and your hands are kind of like kicked up. And you're working on it, your forearm muscles get so tight that they become knots, and those knots kind of pinch and will make things. Is that carpal tunnel? I thought carpal tunnel was like closer to the wrist, but
yeah,
mine was like more in my forearms and whatnot. So it honestly, it's just balance. Like any 3D artist out there, first off, I would say it's just balance. Like stand up, walk around, stretch, take care of yourself. Like do yoga, eat some have like good food, take care. Cause a lot of what you're doing as a 3D artist is once you figure out the pipeline, you're just problem solving. So if your problem solving is just based on what you're doing mentally, what you put in your body is huge. And then outside of that, I would say like, I don't really play games. I think the biggest thing that's made me successful in that, the aspect of being an artist in the industry is I like to travel or like do other things. So if the job of an artist or designer is to interpret the world around you, go out in the world around you, notice things, understand science. Like I did construction a lot growing up. So I had a fascination with architecture too. Mm-hmm. So when I'm building actual sets and like pieces, like I understand how to build it in its raw form.
Right.
So the problem solving becomes easier. And then when I'm texturing, I understand like, oh, cool. Like, you know, metal is going to oxidize, you know, it might get like worn down from the sun being outside here. So it's like, if you pay attention to the things that are around you, it's going to make you a better artist. And I don't think enough people in the industry are doing that. They're like junior because they're like, oh, well, I want to play games afterwards. I mean, it's cool. I'm not saying don't play games. Just don't have that be everything. It's like,
yeah, get a balance. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's the thing. Find the balance.
Sorry. When you said, when we were talking about sitting postures and stuff, we won't say his name, but you remember there was a guy at Midway that you sat with that had one of the ball chairs.
Yep. And I was like, dude, I don't want him in here. Can you? He would stare at me while I was working. It was so weird.
Yeah, he was a little different. Yeah.
Yeah. For those of you who like watch The Office, he was like a weird version of Dwight that was sitting on an exercise ball. Like, no, man, no.
like 5 feet from you.
Yeah, it was
all day.
It was interesting. Just like, if you take care of your body, and I noticed this, I'd see people, because there's like working hard and working smart, and I'd see people when specifically like when I was at Activision, like they'd be like, oh, 7 o'clock would roll or 6 o'clock would roll around, and be like, well, we're gonna do food orders, if you're staying later, get food. And then the food was always good, but it was like that rich, heavy food. So if came at 7 and you ate it, you don't want to be the person that eats and leaves, but they would eat. And then you just kind of sit there and get so sluggish from digesting that you would end up not leaving work till like 10 or 11. And then you'd get into work the next morning and you'd be cranky. And it's like, dude, you got nothing done because you ate crappy food. And now you're cranky.
All the pasta and breads and all these food comas, and you're like, feel like sluggish. And yeah.
But we ate really good at Disney. Like me and John worked at Disney too. And it's like, we had food there. It was like healthy food. I felt good. Like after we got done eating there, I was like, all right, cool. I'm going to go work. The wonderful thing about that place too, is I think we crunched one.
I say we didn't really crunch that much.
We crunched one time, and it was like for 2 hours.
Yeah, I think we had 1 week where people came in and we had like a masseuse, and then we had smoothies brought in. Yeah. So yeah, it was pretty pretty good. Yeah.
So and when people say that crunch is unavoidable, I'm like, it totally is. You just have to plan it right, because we didn't like that was a great example of like, no, we got everything done, and we got like, I remember when we were working on that one project. I don't know if we're allowed to say what project we're working on, but like, we were supposed to work on like 5 or 7 levels, and me and Dan were like, well, we can do double that easy. And we got it done still without crunching.
So what about projects? Like, what's your 1 or 2 favorite projects over your 17 years that you've worked on? If you can pick 1 or 2.
I got to say the ones that like were my 2 favorite projects, I really enjoyed working on MK Armageddon. Like I'm going to give you 3. I enjoyed it because it was really my first big project, my first AAA game, first like something that you can't wait to tell someone you worked on, and I got to meet a lot of cool people, and it was fun. I mean, like, it's a game that I would play, and I did play.
Yeah.
Plus, I think I was like, shit, I was pretty young. Second one was, you know what? For all the headache that it was at certain times, I really enjoyed working on Tony Hawk Ride, because building a studio, I was just getting back into Chicago. We started off in a small office, and we went to an office that was like on the 33rd floor of like this big building downtown.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that place. Yeah,
we had really cool views. The people that we were building team, it was fun. Like, we were building tech and figure things out now. And the sad thing is, I really think if we were given like that extra year and a half we were supposed to have, the game would have been amazing. I really think that. And it sucks that like you can't tell. You know, reviewers don't care. They just look at the product. So was I proud of the product? No, I mean, not really. I thought it was fun to play. I liked what it was fun to work on. I'll say
it's very ambitious though, right? Because it said the board peripheral and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. We created the hardware for that.
Yeah, like, that's crazy.
We created the tech. We created the hardware. Created the team. New IP. Everything. And then like, less than 2 years, and Activision gave very little support.
Yeah, that's very ambitious.
Yeah. But I'd say that the third one, I really liked working on that. Are we allowed? That one project we're working on at Disney that I'm not going to say, the last one.
Mobile game?
Yeah. I really liked working on that, because at that point, I feel like the team was like clicking, like design, programming, like everyone. It was just fun. Like we were having a good time. We were getting stuff done. I liked working on it because obviously we got to work on a lot of Disney properties. I was like, fucking fun.
Yeah.
And I liked working with the people because it was fun. It was like, it was a lot of people that I worked with at High Voltage and Midway and Rebel. It was taking some of these people that I haven't worked with and then people that I have worked with. So it didn't feel unfamiliar. It just felt like comfortable.
Yeah. If people don't know that Wide Load Studios was started by Alex Hropian, that people should know from Bungie, right? He started Bungie in Chicago, and then he started Wide Load, and then Wide Load was acquired by Disney right before I joined. It was like 2009, 2010. And then he was working at Disney Interactive out in LA area, Glendale. Industrial Toys, which is his latest company, was acquired by Electronic Arts. So Alex has got a hell of a streak there. So Wide Load was a very small team. I think we were around 25 people, but it was very tight and very there was no dead weight, right? Everybody was really
and there's still a lot of people that I know that have worked there over the time. They're like, they're cool, like Blizzard or like big studios, and it's like they still say that's like one of their favorite studios. And it was fun. Like it was starting to feel like, because Disney would let us do what we wanted to do with like the space as well. So they were giving us like stuff we were requesting from archives. So it felt like a creative space. It just felt fun. And because it was smaller, like you said, I worked at the bigger studios, and you know, I work at a big, like Epic's huge right now. And don't get me wrong, I love working at Epic. It's great. Mm-hmm. But you can't know everyone. You can, but it's like, that project,
first name basis, right? Yeah.
Yeah. That project was really fun.
So what about the industry right now? Like, what are you curious about? Like, what are you,
like a future of everything?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what are you excited about?
I mean, obviously I'm excited about PlayStation 5. Like, I've always been like a PlayStation person. You know, I like Xbox and all. Like, I like it all. Nintendo Switch is fun. I grew up with a Nintendo and Atari. Like, that was the first thing I had.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm really curious to see how PlayStation 5 goes. I like kiddie games. I do. But I feel like Switch to me is always going to have like that more brighter color palette. Like,
classic Nintendo. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is completely fine. I really enjoy it. But the grittiness and the variety of like a PlayStation 5. I'm curious to see how VR is going to do. I feel like VR is not being used. In my opinion, VR should be more of an experience than a huge interaction. Because if you create these things that you're allowed to like explore and experience and like tell stories and have it be more adventure-based as opposed to like, here, you can move your hands and do all this stuff. For me, that's not really it. So I'm sure where VR will go in that capacity. I want to play Last of Us 2. I'm curious to see whatever is created.
Crazy. I just saw the other day that it wasn't somebody from within the studio or something. So,
even if that happens, like there's always going to be a leak. I don't care. I'm not going to. But yeah, like I'm curious to see like how storytelling is pushed even further, especially now that everyone's got their eyes on it. Like, you know, Last of Us winning a BAFTA in 2013. It's like, okay, cool. You know, God of War did a really good job too. And we keep on seeing these people that are able to create stuff. For me, I'm more of like I want to see something that's going to scare me. So I was really excited for the PT demo when that came out. And I'm hoping they revisit that, because for me, it's like, I like to be scared. Like, I want to be able to explore places that I normally probably wouldn't want to go through. As an artist, I still want to be able to like explore and just stop and look at things. Like, cause there's a game that came out when PlayStation 4 was like, so The Order 1886, and it got kind of like,
I've heard of it. Yeah.
It got a bad rap, but I think it did a good job because visually it looked amazing, and it was short and there was some design flaws. But if you look at the studio that did it, Ready at Dawn, they had done ports just before that. This was their first attempt at a game. And yes, they needed to do a lot of adjustment on the design side, but in the end of the day, they created something that was insanely visually beautiful. So it's like, for me, I like the visuals of it. Not weird visuals, because I feel like when you look at games like Heavy Rain, it's a little bit, I don't know, it's like it's trying to be too real, but not.
Yeah.
There's one game that I want to play that I haven't played yet, is that Control.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Heard of that.
Yeah. So that one looks beautiful, and I haven't done that one yet. But in the next game that played, you know what actually is supposed to be good too? The new Half-Life, the VR Half-Life version.
Yeah, I've been playing that actually.
How do you like it?
Yeah, it's mixed, right? Like, because it is interesting to like look around and see interacting with stuff, but then I have times where I feel like this is like feels almost like Myst, you know, because you remember Myst back, like, because you have to like move forward with using the controller, and then it like shows you a new frame, so that part gets a little bit weird. But I'm only on the second level right now, so I shouldn't give it a full judgment. But yeah, I've heard a lot of great things about it, and that's why I wanted to download and check it out on the Vive. So yeah. What about threats? Like, what are you worried about for the game industry? And like,
I don't really see actually, I mean, I don't think there's going to be really any threats for the gaming industry, because before the only threat would be AAA studios just being redundant with their content. But now, because, you know, companies like Epic and Steam and other ones have kind of provided these platforms for indie developers to create content and share it, I think there's a nice balance of like people being able to play like these more visually expressive ones and more artistically different that are kind of like, you know, Limbo or Inside that Play Dead did. Kind of like, oh wow, cool, this is like Little Nightmares was awesome. So you have these people that are able to do these types of games, and then, you know, EA is still going to do EA, Activision is still going to make another Call of Duty. So, and it's completely fine. I mean, I will never discredit what they're doing, and I love it when people are like, those games are crap, and it's like, if you only knew what it took to make that, and if you actually played it, and like, you'd be like, no, nah, it's not crap.
Right. There's an audience for it, and there's interest for it. Yeah.
But I don't see a threat. I mean, obviously the only threat would be like if the internet just stops working, that's a threat.
Right.
I really hope that people find balance in it, because the only, like, it doesn't worry me. I don't lose sleep in any of this stuff because I feel like it speaks to a person's character. Like, there's so many kids that just all they do is play games. Like, terrible. And everyone's like, oh, video games are ruined. I'm like, no, they're not. I grew up watching terrible horror movies at a very young age, playing Mortal Kombat when I was like super young, and Doom, and like very, very heavy music. Like, I'm completely fine. I'm rational. I know how to process it, but I also know that playing video games like 10 hours a night every single day is terrible for you. So it's,
right, find that balance.
And the only thing that I think people are like aware of that, but there's always going to be those politicians, those like the parents that are like, well, it's terrible for you. I'm like, no, maybe you just need to, I don't know, like throw some rules down. Like, in order to play an hour of Nintendo growing up, me and my brother had to do 10 hours of chores. And I don't know if you remember Nintendo.
Yeah.
It'd be me and him playing like a game that was two player, and I'd probably die right away. And then he would play the rest of the 50 minutes. And I'm like, motherfucker.
Right. It's like, damn it. Yeah. Because games were tougher back then. You didn't have a lot of save files.
And, exactly. Exactly.
So like, oh, I'm out. Shit.
Yeah. I really don't see, like, I don't see any threats to it, because I think people are like, the people who are developing content are just going to keep on doing it. And the industry has always been really good at like adjusting and adapting. And, you know,
here's a big open-ended one. What about a funny or odd story from working in the game industry?
Yeah, I've loads of those. I'll give you
when
one.
When you're comfortable, Sherry.
I'll give you one. And this is pretty funny. So I worked at Midway was a delight. And no, it was really fun. But unfortunately, the building had some sewer issues. And
yes, they did.
I remember this one time I was working in an office, and it was just me by myself. And this was when I was on the Stranglehold team. Okay. And I had my headphones on, and the way that my desk was positioned, I was facing my door, so I could see walking back and forth. And I had my headphones on. I had my desktop, like my PC, like desktop part of it was on on the desk as well. Same as my monitor. I was working it. I was in the groove.
Yeah.
I started seeing people, and I had my feet up. There's like, remember those old Midway desks? Like, I don't know. There's a place where you could put your feet up. My feet were up.
Yeah, vaguely.
I saw people just start running back and forth, and like, more and more. I was like, I couldn't really, I was like, whatever. then I like, someone came in, they were like mouthing, and I couldn't see them because I couldn't hear them because I had
my phone's on. Yeah.
And I turned them off, and he's like, dude, what the hell are you doing? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I put my feet down. There's like 4 inches of water, and it's getting higher and higher and higher. The building was flooding. And
oh, you're in the sports building then. Okay.
Yeah. And the building was flooding. We're like, what the hell? So,
happened like multiple times over there.
Yeah. But at this point, it's like I had my feet were like, a building was flooding. I put my feet in the water. I'm like, what the hell? And all my stuff, luckily, was on my desk. I took everything. I took the outlets. I unplugged everything, and I left everything on top of the desk. I saved all my files. I was like, oh, fuck.
Right.
And I got out there. But like most of the crew, like a lot of people, they had their computers down the ground, and they lost so much stuff.
No. So, depending which flood you're talking about, because it happened multiple times. Yeah. There was this weird
the great flood of 2006, I think.
Yeah. We were working late on MK, and then it started happening. And then we went over to the sports building, and it was flooding over there. And like the drinking fountain was like shooting water.
Yep.
Making a hole like in the ceiling tile. Yep. And then Greg ran in the men's room and he started screaming because like all the toilets were like shooting back up. So then we were running around because PS2 dev kits.
Yep.
You got the privilege to 20 grand to,
yeah, I remember
to
that.
Borrow them from Sony, right? So we were pulling them off the ground because some people had them on the ground, some people had them on like milk crates. So we're running around from our building in the sports building, just getting all this expensive equipment off the floor that we could. And then we looked outside and there was a manhole cover where this flood was happening and it was shooting water like 20 or 30 feet in the air, like a geyser, like old Yellowstone. And we, this was very early, like 2004. So we had our crappy 320 by 240 phones trying to take pictures of this. Cause like, no one's going to believe us, but we took pictures of it and then it just, the whole thing flooded and it was just like a mess. I know you don't play a lot of games, but like, are there any games you're excited about right now?
Control. I want to play that one. Last okay. of Us 2. Definitely want to play that one. Mm-hmm. I want to play whatever Red Barrels is making. Those are the guys that did the Outlast series. I know they're working on something now.
Huh.
And
Red Barrels?
Yeah, they're up in Montreal. I've been following them for a while. It's like a small group of developers that they worked on. Like some of them worked at Ubisoft, some worked at BioWare, yeah. but they did the Outlast. There's two of them, and that's okay. the like they're more horror based. They use Unreal. I like.
There's a lot of talent in Montreal because Ubisoft has a huge studio up there because the Canadian government gives tax refunds.
They have when you're so in the tech many space. People. Yeah, they have
yeah
so
there's
many
thousands of people. I think they've got three campuses up there. I was up there for a Level X event with Seagraph i3D, and I was very impressed. Ubisoft and all the talent that's up in Montreal.
Yeah, Eidos, they have Unity, Substance, ArtStation, Apex up there. Like, there's so many studios, like, so much stuff going up there. If I was someone that's new in the industry, and I don't know how it's going to go now because I'm pretty sure no one's going to like America, I'd be like, all right, I'm going to go up to Montreal, but just because they have so many studios and the cost of living is so much cheaper, and it's like they have movie studios, software studios.
Mm-hmm. It's a very European city. I mean, the one downside is it's Canada, so it's cold, right? And you get a lot of snow, so that's it does snow a lot up there, but it is a very, very cool city. So for sure.
And then whatever Playdead is making next, because I love everything. Mm-hmm. So like they did Limbo and Inside. So I feel like whatever the project working on, it's got to come out like soon, hopefully.
So is there anything else I should have asked you about, but didn't?
No, I mean, if there is, we'll just do another session.
So what about finding you online? Like, you know, your website, you know, the Rookies, Epic, Twitter. You know.
The best part would be just to like, I'm redoing my website. Best part would just be to follow me on like Instagram, which is just Justin Moman. Because that's where I'm going to share a lot of stuff that we do with the Rookies, what we do with Epic, what we do with Heavy Metal and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I'm going to have like, you know, I think the curse is you always want to redo your portfolio, but it's like, you're always busy. So you don't have time to redo your portfolio. Which is a good thing, but, I mean, that's always a good place to start. And, you know, definitely we'll have to do another one of these and get the Rookie guys on here so we can talk more about that and really talk about how they see from a visual effects standpoint, video games work. Mm-hmm. Like, cause it's interesting when I would talk to a lot of these studios that like Rising Sun Pictures, for example, like they did like Logan, like Thor. Okay. They've done a lot of big movies.
Yeah, big stuff. Yeah.
And they're one of the early adopters of using Substance Painter and Unreal into their pipelines. You know, obviously a lot of visual effects studios are like, well, I want to use Mari because it does this. And we're like, no, like tools that we're using, our methods, our pipelines are actually pretty good. And there's always like, obviously nothing's one-to-one. There's a lot of differences between visual effects and games, but they're getting closer.
No, that's cool. And I'm thinking back now. That's right. We were in San Francisco at GDC. I met. Yep.
You met Alan and Mac. Yeah.
You guys came by our booth. So yeah, that's right.
We gotta get you guys on with. We gotta get them on with you.
Yeah. Cool. I got a shout out here. I have a patron person that you may know, Murray Blue.
Oh my God, Murray Blue. Yeah.
Murray Blue, the awesome Murray Blue. Big fan of Murray.
Yeah.
Murray Blue. Yeah.
That guy was awesome. I'm glad you did a good job of picking him up. One of the best students ever. That guy would come in all the time and just like work. And then he'd roll his eyes at students the way I would have been like, oh yeah. I'm like, good. Yeah. You're going to do fine. So
do the work. Yeah.
He's a hustler. I'm glad you guys grabbed him. He's going to, Murray's going to make, he's got to do good things.
He's a avid listener of the show and he's a patron. So I want to do a shout out to Blue there. So, well, thank you, Justin. This has been great. I a lot of great information here and I think people are going to enjoy the show.
Oh yeah. I mean, thanks for having me on. And then anytime you want to do it in the future, just let me know.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast. Go to the website at gamedevadvice.com and you can find the show notes along with show notes for all the other episodes. Please also check out the new Patreon page at patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Have a lot of options up there for how you can support the show. Again, that's patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Thanks again for listening and being part of the show. Take care. Bye-bye.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.